Welcome to the next in the series of Homespun C-SPANs on the low-power FM hearings in Congress. On HR 1147, the Local Community Radio Act of 2009. That's 1147. HR 1147, we continue the question and answer session in the congressional hearings in the U.S. House Subcommittee on Communications Technology and the Internet. The three bills are all melded together into this one hearing. The three bills are H.R. 1133, the Family Telephone Connection Protection Act of 2009 regarding the high cost of prisoners telephoning their family. H.R. 1084, the Commercial Advertisement Loudness Mitigation Act, COM Act, which actually is about the high compression rates of the audio in commercials that makes them sound very, very loud and disruptive and jarring. H.R. 1147, the Local Community Radio Act of 2009. This was recorded Thursday, June 11, 2009, in the Rayburn House office building. LPFM is very important. If you listened to Bill Moyers on the weekend of July 24th, you heard that Atkinson, the gunman that shot up the Knoxville, Tennessee Unitarian Church, did so specifically. He himself said he hated liberals and considered them termites and called upon people to kill liberals in his manifesto. Now here's the Minister Bice of the Knoxville Unitarian Church on the subject.
If you look at the history of like situations like in Rwanda in 1994, talk radio was a big part of leading to the conditions that created a genocide. The Hutu radio disc jockeys would call the Tutsis cockroaches. And there is the sense that these aren't human beings. You know, they're not human beings with children or grandchildren. These are cockroaches. And when you hear in talk radio that liberals are evil, that they are traitors, that they are godless, that they are on the side of the terrorists, that's hate language. You don't negotiate with evil people. You don't live in community with people you consider to be traitors.
And the talk that Minister Bice is referring to.
Glenn Beck, for instance, fantasized about murdering a liberal filmmaker.
I'm thinking about killing Michael Moore. And I'm wondering if I could kill him myself or if I would need to hire somebody to do it. I think I could. I think he could be looking me in the eye, you know, and I could just be choking the life out. Is this wrong?
This is exactly the pattern seen in Rwanda. Okay, the details are different, but the pattern is the same. You tell them who to hate. You label them insects. Then you tell the mobs where the insects live. And you suggest that killing them is a great thing. America needs little WRIRs in every community, so there is at least one outlet for the voices that would otherwise go unheard. And before you say, oh, NPR and PBS will do that, notice how much more effective the NPR stations that have community radio stations competing in their same markets. Listen, for example, to WHRV in Norfolk, competing with community radio. WAMU in Washington, D.C., competing with community radio. Even WCVE in Richmond, Virginia has vastly increased their local news since a community radio station was established to carry those local and dissident voices unheard by religious, commercial, or NPR networks. And so we take you back to the next in the series of the question and answer session, especially on H.R. 1147, the Local Community Radio Act of 2009, in the U.S. House Subcommittee on Communications, Technology, and the Internet.
Thank you. Let me start with the three on this side and just work down the table. Let me just give an editorial comment more than a question. And certainly I think the least sympathetic characters are the ones that are in prison. But there is something distasteful about taking advantage of them, too, which I think is the underlying premise for this act. Mr. Hopfinger, you made a good point. That there are security concerns and technologies that have to be woven in here that add to the expense. I think that's extremely fair and a good point. I guess the issue is then how much of a gap is there when you add in the cost of this additional technologies, where it's just becoming the, in essence, I guess, the slush fund for the jails or the prisons. Mr. Crow, I'll give you about 15 seconds because I got a couple other things.
Yes, I think Mr. Hopfinger has been unduly modest. I'd like to put in a plug for Securus Securus, for example, in Florida, is able to provide collect calling, interstate collect calling, for 4 cents a minute, plus a connection charge of $1.20, which is equivalent to 14 cents a minute for a 12-minute call. And they do that elsewhere. So they can do it. They can cover all of these expensive security functions and all the monitoring and everything else that they've been talking about at those very reasonable rates. Plus, in Florida, they're paying, out of that low rate, a 35% commission. So in Florida, you can have it all.
All right. Well, time back, and I'll just say, I think this does raise a concern, and my message back to Sheriff Goad is perhaps to communicate that even on the conservative pro-justice side, there's concerns about the telephone rates. I have the next group on audio sound. It is a real concern. You guys know that. Starzynski? Close enough. I'll follow up on Cliff's notes. The public demands this. They want action from us. So the message back, Mr. Donovan, is and to you is and NAB and everyone else that's involved in here, the sooner the better. If this doesn't get cleared up, if you guys will vote and address this issue in September, yep. If we come back here this same time next year and most of the TV stations haven't resolved this, this is going to pass. That's my message to you. In our household, it's so dang annoying that the habit that we have is when the commercials come on, we just hit mute. Not because we don't want to hear the commotion, but right. The decibel level goes up significantly.
Right, and that's not a good place for us to be.
And that's not a good place. It's self-defeating.
Right.
Last,
exactly.
Let's go to my major issue with Mr. Doyle. And Mr. Doyle, who's no relation to the author of this bill, just thought I'd play a...
That is correct. My side is not really good at breeding that much, so we...
Too much information. there was a suggestion that in the MITRE study, not only was it the reading, but 5 of 7 of the other sites had interference. That's not my understanding. Is that accurate?
The MITRE study showed that if we throw out one outlier case, that there was no... interference at distance for LP 100 stations, your basic low power station, at distances greater than 333 meters, that interference became common under 250 meters and severe within 100 meters of the LPFM transmitter site. It's never been the commission's position that there would be no interference, but as I tried to explain in my testimony, we have ample experience with translators to figure out how to make this work.
All right.
Mr. Terry, would you mind if I just...
You have 21 seconds.
The area of interference, we're talking on the grounds of a low-power radio station, we're talking 0.0013 of the geographic area of a full-power radio station. So, tiny area. If you're next door to a low-power radio station in the same building as a low-power radio station, you might not be able to hear one other radio station. Other than that, there's not an issue.
Mr. Doyle, and we're not related, for the record. So 10 years ago, the committee heard the fears from broadcasters that if the FCC licensed these low-power FM stations on third adjacent, that the dial was going to be drenched in oceans of interference. So when we passed the Radio Broadcasting Preservation Act on an appropriations rider, Mr. Doyle, I take it to mean that all low-power FM broadcasting has stopped on those third adjacent frequencies?
Well, yes and no. We certainly have carefully followed the directions from Congress and not licensed so-called low-power FM stations. On the other hand, what I've tried to explain is that FM translators are technically indistinguishable from low-power FM stations, and that, for example, in the chairman's own district, the station he was concerned about, eight translator stations operate without effective third
right.
adjacent
and connection. I'm looking at page 5 of your testimony where the FCC says there's 1,800 of these translators already broadcasting right now on the same frequencies that these non-commercial groups want to broadcast on. Is that correct?
Well, most of these translators are actually in the non-reserve band, the 92 to 108, as opposed to the 88 to 92 part, where non-commercial stations typically broadcast. Most low-power licensing has occurred in the part of the band where there are not non-commercial stations. There are some, but by and large,
but we have
problem.
Translators on third adjacent.
Absolutely.
Okay, so Ms. Beasley, does your organization or you personally are you advocating for the elimination of these translators?
We do not have or use translators within our company. So it's the NAB's position that it's my understanding that full power FM stations use translators for fill-in to cover the mass.
But NAB's not advocating that we eliminate translators. And do you think these translators cause oceans of interference?
I can't speak to that because I personally do not have translators.
Uh-huh. I don't think that's the NAB's position. I guess Ms. Lianza, who owns and operates the translators?
By and large, most full power broadcasters have some sort of translators. It depends on what type of service they're providing. Right. Certainly you don't, but many do. It's a widespread use. It's not an atypical, unusual.
So if they don't cause interference and they're technically identical and these translators don't have some special magical power to work, then surely these translators must be less powerful than an LPM broadcast. Mr. Doyle, full power FM stations sometimes run up to 100,000 watts, while a non-commercial FM station can run up to 100 watts. So I'm assuming these translators must be less powerful than that. How powerful are these translators that don't cause interference when they're at third adjacent from another station?
Our rules permit translators up to 250 watts.
250 watts. So 2.5 times more powerful than any LPFM station. So what you're telling me is, and I hope my colleagues will listen to this, is that what we call Rose by any other name would smell as sweet, but when it comes to FCC and the big broadcasters, this name is critical. Translators that serve the interest of big broadcasters work just fine on these third adjacent channels, and there's no complaints and no issues about interference. But when a low-power station run by community groups, schools, churches, local governments cause interference, somehow in the same adjacent channel, these somehow cause interference. I just hope once and for all we can sort of eliminate this double talk that's been taking place for years. I want to talk about interference, too. Now, Ms. Beasley, in your statement, you referenced the MITRE report, and you said that there was interference caused by low-power FM stations. I've read that study, and in the most extreme circumstance, it was found that the interference was 0.13% of the population inside the protected zone of a full-power station. Just for my notes now, you find that to be an unacceptable level of interference?
What I read last night was there was significant degradation at these five sites when you are testing with boomboxes and Walkmans.
0.13%, but you found that, you think that's unacceptable?
Such that, well, if you can't get a signal, if you can't hear the programming, if they're static, and if you're operating when there's a hurricane going through your area, and we're providing information to the mass, to the masses, and we, yes.
So I take that as a yes. Okay. I'm curious. I see the NAB has pushed for allowing broadcasters to put HD radio stations next to and along with their analog broadcast, but the engineers found that an average of 0.6% of the population inside the protective zone could have their listening affected. Now, that's not a worst-case scenario like low power's 0.13%. That's an average finding, 0.6%. So that's a lot more interference than the low power stations would cause, even in a worst-case scenario. So, Mr. Doyle, let me make sure I understand this correctly. The NAB has endorsed this 0.6 level of interference as acceptable for HD radio.
We continue the question and answer session in the congressional hearings in the U.S. House Subcommittee on Communications, Technology, and the Internet on three bills, all considered in this same hearings: H.R. 1133, the Family Telephone Connection Protection Act of 2009; H.R. 1084, the Commercial Advertisement Loudness Mitigation Act, COM Act; and H.R. 1147, the Local Community Rate Act of 2009. This was recorded Thursday, June 11th, 2009, in the Rayburn House Office Building. Back to the question and answer session at the hearings in the U.S. House Subcommittee on Communications Technology and the Internet, covering of special interest H.R. 1147, the Local Community Radio Act of 2009. And don't forget that your friends and family can call their Congress critters to become co-sponsor of H.R. 1147 even before it goes to the floor for a vote.
I don't really understand.
Has the NAB filed a request to multiply the power of these digital signals by 1,000%?
No, they've asked to increase it by tenfold, from 1% to 10% of the analog power level. The issue there, Mr. Doyle, I think is different. That's a question of digital into analog, and I'm not sure that it correlates to the analog into analog technical dispute that is your bill is focused on.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you one final question, Mr. Doyle. You're the expert at the FCC. You've studied this issue backwards and forwards. Twice the FCC in bipartisan votes have recommended that Congress lift this prohibition on third adjacent channel. Do you think that passing this bill will in any way hurt public radio stations like my friend Mr. Walden is concerned about, or this will cause any interference of a major proportion outside that 100-foot zone that you're thought? I mean, what basically happens so that finally communities like mine who can't get LPFM, can't get an LPFM station in the city of Pittsburgh? There's a lot of places in this country, 140 million people, don't have access to this valuable service because of this rule, which apparently it doesn't seem to cause misery. Do you see any harmful effects by allowing us to use third adjacent for LPFM?
The commission's judgment was not that there would be no interference. It was that the interference would be tightly limited to the immediate environment of the LPFM transmitter site. And looking at the significant benefits of an expanded LPFM service, decided that the benefits far outweighed the very, very limited interference that would occur typically within 100 or 200 meters of the LPFM transmitter.
Thank you, Mr. Doyle.
Thank you very much.
Morgan's right. Has 5 minutes.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Doyle, I have a question for you on, do LPFM applicants have priority on frequency over existing translators?
LPFM has priority over no one right now. The priority relationship between translators and LPFM stations is a first come first served rule. So they're co-equal. So that today,
one can't bump the other.
That is correct.
Okay. Talk to me about the requirements on LPFM. Do they have to have a main? Do they fall under the main studio rule?
They do not have a main studio rule. They must be local. We don't have staffing requirements for them. We don't have public inspection files.
I want to go back to that. So low power FM, do they have a requirement to serve their community like commercial broadcasters do? And how do they identify their compliance with that if they don't have a public file or a main studio?
Well,
what's the FCC required?
Every station must be license must be held by a local community organization.
Understood.
It must be operated on a non-commercial basis.
And how do you monitor that point? Because I've heard from people that they're out basically selling advertising. Are they allowed to do that?
No, they
and,
are.
And, do you take enforcement actions?
Not my division directly.
Could
but
you provide me with enforcement actions you've taken and complaints you've received?
We'd be very happy to do so. And there have been some related to violations of our underwriting rules. So you are correct.
I thought so. I want to go back, though. As a citizen, I have the right to go into any commercial radio station, I assume public broadcast as well, and look at their public file to see how they're addressing the issues that are important to their community. What's the requirement for an LPFM? What's my right as a citizen to go in and see what they've identified as their community issues and how they're addressing them? Do I have right to a public file?
The commission created this service, they decided that it would work best with very limited reporting and filing responsibilities, and they do not have.
Do they have to do community ascertainment? Do they have to decide what's in the importance of their community?
No, but certainly, okay. Like every other station, every 8 years, their license comes up for renewal, and the public is welcome to comment on whether the station has operated in the public interest.
And that public interest, though, for other broadcasters, that's pretty well spelled out. They have to serve their community, right? So you're telling me these LPFMs don't have to serve their community. Is that, how do I know? I mean, how, they don't have to identify?
They have the same obligations.
Oh, they do. So they do have a public file requirement?
There's not a public file.
And they have a main studio requirement where I can go in and look?
But they're licensed also under the Communications Act. They have an obligation to serve the public.
I don't think your mic's on, by the way. It's an old radio guy.
It must be just a very
or just get real close to it. So, but I'm trying to get to this point of they can come into, as public, can go into any radio, commercial or public broadcast station and look in the public file. My question is, do LPFMs have to have a public file?
Currently, under the rules, they do not.
And do they have to identify what the issues of concern are in their community and address those issues?
They do, generally speaking, because they're subject to the same public interest standard that all broadcasts are subject to.
So, Mr. Doyle, is that correct? They have to identify community interests on a quarterly basis and speak to how they address them?
The quarterly issues programs list requirement does not apply to low power stations.
So how do you ever measure then when it comes up to license renewal, whether they've served their community? What's the standard you apply?
Well, while listeners would not have the ability to review a station's issues programs list, they have the same opportunities as listeners of any station to come to the commission with their concerns about the programming that they have heard on the station during the prior license term.
Are the LPFMs required to have the emergency alert system capabilities to notify their listeners in the event of an emergency?
They do have an EAS requirement.
Okay, and they're not a priority station, though, I assume.
I don't think any.
Primary. None are primaries. Okay, all right.
But they do, most of them are set up automated so they can transmit through that signal automatically at any time.
Yeah, they're allowed to do unattended operation as well, right? Is there any requirement of local programming on those LPFMs, or could they just download satellite programming and rebroadcast it?
Our licensing criteria favor those stations that pledge to do at least 8 hours of locally originated programming, but there's no local program origination requirement.
All right, thank you.
Than on any other station. There's no such obligation.
Thank you. We're going to recess till about 12:25.
Thank you for listening to another Homespun C-SPAN series on the hearings in the U.S. House Subcommittee on Communications Technology and the Internet, covering of special interest H.R. 1147, the Local Community Radio Act of 2009. Don't forget that your friends and family can call their Congress critters to become co-sponsors of 1147 even before it goes to a floor for a vote. And the news has been full of something that might seem at first to have nothing to do with LPFM, but actually does. The latest in the healthcare debate is a discussion that the Obama efforts includes a push for euthanasia for the elderly and disabled. It seems to me we have euthanasia now for the poor or middle class that have gone bankrupt. The conservatives say they don't want the government to restrict their treatment and doctor choices, but they seem to be fine with HMOs, health maintenance organizations, doing the exact same rationing they claim to fear from the government, that is, choice of doctors and treatments. It seems to me that simply extending Medicare to everyone takes care of all that. Just extends the age range that can use Medicare under the current rules, or extend the income range that can use Medicaid. And I'd like to note that Medicare has not destroyed the private insurance market. The private insurance market sells supplemental insurance to Medicaid. So Medicaid or Medicare for All would not destroy private insurance. However, the lack of a public option is destroying small business and small nonprofits, because the next Bill Gates right now has to choose between working at some large corporation that will not run with his inspirations, but does offer restrictive HMO healthcare. And I'd also like to notice that plenty of the conservative opponents of public health care now get health care via Medicare at your tax expense. So, if Medicare is good enough for the conservatives that get it, why is the same Medicare not good enough for me or you? I'd like to return to the example of the next Bill Gates. This is just one of the reasons that the answer to the question, should I pay for your health insurance, is answered with a resounding yes. Just one of several reasons, yes. Because the wealthy will get even wealthier if their future mines of inspiration survive long enough for their inspirations to work. Consider that most small businesses fail. It's hard. People usually have to try several times. Those overnight successes you read about sometimes in the newspaper, there's nothing overnight about it at all. They worked for years, decades sometimes. Right now, there's someone working on an inspiration we know nothing of, the next Bill Gates. This next Bill Gates must choose now between working for Solus Inc. that has no interest in his inspirations. Solus Inc. probably is managed by a pack of normals that think this next Bill Gates is weird and not a manager type, and won't give his ideas any credibility. So this next Bill Gates must decide to stay at Solus Inc. and get health care, but let his soul of invention die for lack of time. Or flip the quarter, start his own company, and bet that he won't get into an accident or develop an illness before his business efforts pay off well enough to pay for his own health care. So this next Bill Gates dies, or is so waylaid by health issues that the next Microsoft is never built. And then those wealthy people will not have that investment opportunity. Because as we burn up the easily accessed resources buried in the crust of planet Earth or growing on its surface, the remaining resource is the human mind and inspiration. And if the body that carries the mind and inspiration cannot survive long enough as a nascent small business or nonprofit, then that inspiration and investment opportunity dies. And before you say, "Oh, somebody else will do it," I'd like to point out that Richmond has about 1 million people. Nobody else in Richmond, none of the other 1 million people, applied to the FCC to create anything even vaguely like WRIR. Just one person made the application. And then again, even though we know better, in October of 2007, when the FCC had a window to apply for full power construction permits to build community radio stations out to the counties, again, there was only one person who led a team to apply for community radio even vaguely like WRIR. Again, 1 million plus people covered by the area from almost North Carolina border to north of Fredericksburg that is covered by an application that I worked on with others to create. The daisy chain of 38 applicants for just two frequencies out of many more, and none of the other applicants propose a community radio station anything even vaguely like WRIR. And thus I conclude, for example, that WRIR would never have existed had I not had a minimum of health issues. I flipped the quarter, and we all won, but the quarter might have come up the other way. How many other WRIRs will not happen because of our rationing of health care by income? How many other Microsofts have never existed or never will exist for investment opportunities because we currently have euthanasia by income? If you're pro-life and or want a future of thousands of inspired small businesses competing for your investments, consider supporting the simple answer of letting everyone have the same health care as congressmen and senators get, Medicare for All, with H.R. 676, the Medicare for All option currently called House Resolution H.R. 676. And I again draw your attention to the fact that all these local shows have a disclaimer that these opinions may or may not be anyone else's opinion, and certainly not that of the board of directors, the underwriters, or the other volunteers at WRIR, as is also the case for any decent-minded commercial station.